This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. We were talking the other day about the similarities between the recent 12-day war against Iran and the operation that was carried out to rescue hostages from Entebbe. Mm. And how the lead pilot felt the brunt of the responsibility and the foreboding as he flew to Iran, and he kind of likened it to the way that the pilots must have felt when they were flying to Entebbe. Well, it is the 49th anniversary of that operation in Entebbe, and in fact, the Gregorian calendar date is actually the 4th of July, 1976. Which equates to Zion B'Tammuz, the seventh day of Tammuz, which is actually today. And of course, that for Prime Minister Netanyahu is his Yortzeit. It is the memorial day for the falling of his brother Yoni, who led the operation at Entebbe and was the only IDF casualty in that operation, even though the IDF had brought a full operating theater in one of the planes that landed at Entebbe with a medical team on hand, ready to deal with any medical emergency. Unfortunately, they were unable to save Yoni's life. And the Prime Minister yesterday went to his grave, to enter the grave of his brother Yoni to mark the Yortzeit. And of course, he has a hero status, and the operation was just remarkable in the way that it was carried out. People who are not familiar with the details of that operation would be well advised to go and read up about it and to watch the movies and to read the books. It's just the most incredible operation. But for me, the thing that really stands out is the picture of Yoni's grave on Mount Herzl, the military cemetery in Mount Herzl, where he's been buried. And his memorial stone is exactly the same as every other IDF soldier. The name.
Oh, that's so interesting.
His parents' name, where he was born and when, where he fell and when. That's it. It really reveals nothing at all about this unbelievable operation, the hero that he was, the way that he directed the operation. It just reveals nothing at all. It is just the same gravestone as every other IDF soldier, and I think it just conceals so much about what went on. You can just imagine what was going through his mind at that moment when he fell, when he was shot. And that was almost at the end of the operation. By then, the hostages already had been rescued. They were already on the planes and heading out, coming back to Israel to a hero's welcome at Ben Gurion Airport. That was really one of the highlights of the Jewish state, was the moment when those hostages landed back from Entebbe in Israel, welcomed by cheering crowds, by senior dignitaries. Just the most incredible success in the way that the operation was carried out. And yet this real sadness that the commander Yoni Netanyahu fell while commanding that 49 years ago today.
It would be interesting to know, I mean, obviously we don't, but where he would have gone along this political journey. It's really amazing to think about it, given the given the position that he held, given the family that he came from. It would have been very, very interesting just to be able to see an alternative journey for him and for the family. Really just incredible. That is obviously the tragedy of this. And speaking of which, an IDF soldier was killed, a number of others injured in attacks in Gaza yesterday.
So, yeah, there were a number of incidents that took place in Gaza yesterday, all around the area of Shajaya. And in the morning, there was a division of the commando brigade that entered the Shajaya area. The IDF had not been operating in Shajaya for some time. Then during the time that they'd entered Shajaya, there were two incidents where rocket-propelled grenades were fired towards IDF forces. First of all, one was fired towards the building where soldiers from the Ghaz unit were stationed. There was a hit. There were some of the IDF soldiers who were actually injured in that particular incident. Thereafter, another anti-tank missile was launched towards a tank. Unfortunately, in that incident, a soldier was killed. There were other soldiers who were also injured in that incident. And then from then on, it kind of just developed because the Air Force was called in to drop missiles in order to protect the rescue forces that had come in to try to rescue those injured and soldiers who'd been killed in that incident. And then even after the two anti-tank incidents that took place, there was actually another engineering vehicle that had been hit by a bomb where two soldiers were injured. So all in all, eight IDF soldiers were injured, some of them quite seriously. And of course, one 19-year-old soldier from the tank brigade was killed, 19-year-old Yaniv Mikhailovich from Rehovot. And again, we are just heartbroken by the losses that we are sustaining in Gaza and elsewhere. Every single soldier for us comes at a huge price. We mourn everyone who falls, everyone who is injured. For us, this is really, really personal. There is no concept of, well, they are soldiers and their job is to fight in the military and war is a dangerous thing and unfortunately there will be casualties. We just unfortunately don't see things like that. And for us, every loss is very, very heartfelt and very, very seriously taken. So we are mourning today for the Mikhailovich family, for the falling of a young man, and of course for that family who are now, they are changed forever. Nobody can really go back to the day before. And that's what we've discovered over the course of this war where so many of our soldiers have been killed. We just simply can't return back to the day before. That is a moment in time when the family is changed forever. So our condolences, of course, to that family and Rufua Shlema. We wish those who have been injured a speedy recovery, that they will be back to full strength as soon as possible. But the war continues, and you know, we are unfortunately obliged to fight this in order to protect ourselves and, of course, to bring our hostages home. Day 636 that they are being kept in Gaza and still counting, unfortunately.
Unbelievable. Israel is reported to be using Russia as an intermediary with Iran and Syria. What do we know about this?
Yes, so this is kind of a really interesting development. You know, clandestine is the word that is being used, clandestine diplomacy, with apparently Israeli officials traveling to Moscow to meet with Russian officials to try somehow to develop some mediation between Israel and Iran and Israel and Syria. Now, the Syrian link, I think, is also being played via the US, because one of the things that we are kind of expecting from Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit to Washington next week is the possibility that there might be an announcement about some sort of a more permanent cessation of hostilities with Syria. Not quite a peace agreement, not quite even an understanding, not even potentially like, let's talk and be friendly, but a half a baby step. Which says, you know, we are not at war with you anymore. There is a certain cessation of hostilities. And I think that that's going to be kind of gradually the path that is led towards potentially coming to some sort of a peace arrangement with Syria. So I thought that the Syrian track was really being played more through the US than through Russia. Clearly, Russia does have its links into the Syrian regime. And clearly it has its links into the Iranian regime. At the moment, we understand, even though that the US is talking about trying to hold talks with Iran, I'm not quite sure how realistic those talks are at the moment, or whether that we can expect them to take place and take place seriously to any degree. But Russia certainly has its links with the Iranian regime. And I'm sort of, I would love to be a fly on the wall when the Israelis come to talk to the Russians about what they want to say to the Iranians. What exactly is the message that we're trying to send to them? I'm not sure. But clearly there is some attempt to create this clandestine diplomacy via Russia. And of course, you know, it just further complicates Israel's relationship with Russia, because we do know that Israel, even though it has publicly not acknowledged that it is supplying arms and ammunition to Ukraine, we do understand that there are certain versions of the Iron Dome that have been active in Ukraine in the war against Russia. So on the one hand, we're providing certain defense mechanisms, certain defense systems to Ukraine. On the other hand, we're still talking to Russia. The relationship with Russia, we will have perhaps another opportunity to discuss it further. It's very, very fascinating. And alongside that, Turkey, because Turkey right now is the big elephant in the room. We don't really know. On the one hand, a member of NATO. On the other hand, clearly not supporting the U.S. position in this conflict in the Middle East. Certainly not a friend of Israel right now. Much, much closer to Iran and to Russia and to that side of the political divide. So Turkey is a very fascinating case in point. But apparently, there are some talks with Russia. And those talks are being used to send messages to Syria and to Iran. The question is just what we're trying to say to them.
Yeah, I was just thinking, what is that message? Well, I'm sure we'll find out one way or another. The Weizmann Institute suffered significant war damage. I keep meaning to come back to this because we saw it happen. There's been a lot of development and a lot of discussion since then. What was the story here?
Well, I think in the first instance, we need to acknowledge that the Weizmann Institute in Rehovot, which is an incredibly austere institution and has incredible research, and there's so much interesting and useful research that's come out of there over the years. Well, they took a direct hit of a missile that had not been intercepted from Iran. The Iranians labeled this as directed towards Israel's military development laboratory. And the reality is that the building that took the main hit was the Ulman building of the Weizmann Institute, which is where a lot of the cancer research has been done over the years and was being done. And unfortunately, as a result of that hit, so much research just went up in flames in a moment. The labs and the refrigeration units that were housing all kinds of samples that had been collected up from numerous countries over many, many years, tumor samples that had been collected over 5 years from cancer patients in the US and France and Switzerland and many other countries, all went up in flames in an instant. And many doctoral research students found their doctoral thesis just simply being blown up in an instant the moment that missile hit. So unfortunately, there was a lot of loss. Many, many research programs went up in flames and were damaged and really need to be started again. Valuable tissue samples have been destroyed. And it's ironic that the Iranians went and damaged work that could really have benefited the international community in the cancer research field, because this was very, very highly advanced and developed and quite unique cancer research that was taking place in the Weizmann Institute, which now will need to be started from scratch again due to the damage. Set aside the amount of money that will need to be invested to rebuild that building, and of course to buy all the equipment, which probably costs three times what the building will cost. So unfortunately, huge amount of loss. And then just amongst all of the loss, and just when we were kind of despairing over how much we lost, the Weizmann Institute decided to unveil some leukemia breakthrough that they'd managed to achieve just before that missile demolished the building. And this leukemia breakthrough is very, very significant, a groundbreaking study that had been done to track subtle changes in human blood in order to be able to detect early signs of leukemia. This was meticulous and very hard done work over the years. And they had literally just submitted that research for publication prior to the missile hitting the building. So amongst all the sad loss that we experienced at the Weizmann Institute, there was this little ray of light where they'd managed to finally, just literally in the days prior to the missile hitting, they'd finally sent all of this research for publication. And so that will be research that can then be taken forward and hopefully will benefit leukemia students. And as I say, it's a very ironic that the Iranians were destroying cancer research that was done. And apparently they had intended to hit the Weizmann Institute and, as I say, labeled it as some sort of a military research lab, when in fact there could be nothing further from the truth in terms of the amount of amazing medical research that had been done there. And even though they've suffered this loss, I have little doubt that it will all be recovered. It'll take a lot of time and money and effort in order to recover what had been lost, but I have little doubt that we will get there in the end.
I couldn't agree more, Anthony Reich. Thank you as always. Thank you for a great week of reporting. Wishing you a peaceful weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you on Monday morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.